Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
How are you? Thursday, November 21st, Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sean Carey here. Steve will be there in a skosh in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, North 4th Street, Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Get in contact with us by email, stevejones@wkok.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle at stevejonespsu. Also, we invite you to subscribe to our podcast. We are on the Apple Podcast app and Google Play. Search Steve Jones Show. Hit the subscribe button. And we'll drop the shows to your smartphone and tablet. Take them with you. Listen to them anytime, anywhere. And you can also go back in time. Go to stevejonesshow.com. Mm-hmm. And you can access 3 months of shows there. By the way, we've been getting some really great reception on your conversation, Steve, yesterday with Kevin Reichert from Ballpark Digest. Lots of great conversation on our Twitter account from the interview yesterday. And check that out on the podcast if you didn't get a chance to catch that terrific 20 minutes between you and Kevin.
And the State College Spikes put out a statement today. I'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
The Myles Garrett situation. First of all, the NFL has upheld his six-game suspension. So his suspension's been upheld. Marquise Pouncey, I think, as suspected, and we talked about this, by giving him three games, it allowed you to appeal to get it to two. He ends up now with two. Okay. Two puts him out of the Cleveland game, but that's it. So you give him a three-game suspension with the idea you can reduce it and keep him out of the Cleveland game, and that's exactly what the NFL did. Myles Garrett made an accusation about Mason Rudolph, and the accusation was that Rudolph used a racial slur, which Rudolph has vehemently denied. Here is the issue, as I see it, with the accusation. After the game, Myles Garrett did not say anything about a racial slur. In his statement, who owns the statement? The next day, 2 days later? He made no statement there about a racial slur. So he had two opportunities to mention, hey, look, he said something, and I'm not going to get into it, but it wasn't right, and it just set me off. He didn't say that. It wasn't even a part of the narrative. And when he had a chance to then release a statement, thus meaning he had time to think about it, he didn't say anything about it then either.
And what baffles me as well, it was about this time yesterday afternoon we started to hear information out of that hearing that took place yesterday morning, but you didn't hear anything about this alleged racial slur yesterday. That's what really confuses me. If it's something that huge that was discussed in that hearing, I'm really floored that we didn't find out about this time 24 hours ago.
Yeah, but I go back to after the game, Sean. After the game, when you're still emotional about it, you would think that's where it would come out. What sets you off? Didn't say anything. Now a chance to release a statement. Didn't say anything. Now this comes up. And, I mean, Rudolph even said yesterday, remember we played the PC ad yesterday. He said, look, he says, I didn't even say anything. Right, and this is before anything came out. And if you're going to have it, if Rudolph said it, well, this is a different conversation. The two of them are on the ground together. You don't have a lot of players at that moment around either one. So it becomes he said, he said. But once everything started going, started to move its way toward going south, remember, Pouncey and DeCastro both jumped in, and neither one of them said anything. I mean, there's no supporting evidence to this. That's the issue. And the fact is that it wasn't until the third statement where it finally was brought up. You know, 5 days later. Again, in the aftermath where emotions are high, not brought up. Okay. Okay. Day to think about it, statement, not brought up. Okay. Go to the NFL office, brought up. So he maintains he gets six. And Pouncey gets reduced from 3 to 2. Rudolph expects a fine, but there has been no fine levied as of yet. I think that covers all of it, right?
I think it does. I think we're good. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, that's where I go when I go to this. All right. Now the statement from the Spikes on yesterday, this is not around yesterday's interview, but because the Spikes finally put out a statement. Minor League Baseball, as Kevin Reichert's pointed out, has really kind of stayed low-key, and so have the Spikes. Well, the Spikes put out a statement today, and I don't know if Williamsport's put out a statement, but here's the Spikes statement. Over the past several weeks, multiple media outlets have reported about the reduction of minor league baseball teams for 2021 and beyond, including the State College Spikes and 41 other clubs throughout the United States. MILB is early in the negotiations with Major League Baseball, and the process is ongoing, with nothing finalized to this point, and perhaps not for quite some time. Remember, the deadline is September 15th. However, we are compelled to reassure our fans and stakeholders that we are open for business for the 2020 season, providing the 15th season of fun, affordable family entertainment at Medlar Field at Libratto Park. We are also committed to once again support our local communities year-round. Through numerous events at the ballpark, as well as in-kind and monetary donations, we were able to raise over $500,000 for local charities this past year alone, and look forward to doing so again in the coming year. In addition, while MLB has stated publicly that among their main concerns are facility standards, Medlar Field at Libratto Park has always been fully compliant with Major League Baseball's standards. We look forward to making dear friends once again in 2020 and for many more years to come. That's the statement from the State College Spikes. And we did get a lot of reaction from Kevin Reichert on that. So there you are.
Well, you're right about the fundraising and reaching out to the community. You got a phenomenal general manager and a terrific team there, and you as well with the broadcast each and every summer that know the right thing to do, know to reach out and just be part of the community. And so many people look forward to that every summer.
Oh, they sure they do.
Yeah.
Now, could we possibly see, as an option, State College moving from short season to a full season look? But maybe not. For example, I think Reading and Altoona in the Eastern League, I believe, play 144 games. would full season in this look on this level maybe be 100 to 120 games instead of 76? Just throwing out some numbers. But this will take a while. There'll be some talk in San Diego. After that, there'll be probably more negotiation that will take place in late January into February. And then we'll see at that point where it stands. But remember, anytime you do a negotiation, the one side that's trying to get something changed is going to throw out their most extreme proposal first, with the idea that you can find some common ground and then settle it. I think that's what Major League Baseball has done. They've thrown out their most extreme scenario first with the idea that, yes, there'll be some teams eliminated, maybe a league or two eliminated, but there'll be a reorganization, and it will not be 42 teams that are eliminated. It may be half that. Just a thought. But that's what we do here. It's all just a thought. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Always great to have the wonderful Shine Carey alongside. And we got a lot going on in tomorrow's show.
By the way, your wonderful brother, we're not going to wait till tomorrow because he's not in the he's not in the penthouse hanging with you this week in the picks segment. So, you know, he's requested an appearance today instead of tomorrow. So we will... we'll honor that request.
We have to.
Yeah.
He is, after all,
the king.
The king. Yes. Anything about the suit I should know before we go to break?
Sends his best. Says hi. We had a special Friendsgiving luncheon today.
Oh, that's good. That's great.
It was absolutely wonderful. The food was outstanding. Fellowship was terrific. I was sitting at the end of the table where I would wheel back a little bit and look down the hall to the interim office, door closed, waiting for him to show up.
Yeah.
Door closed, still not present. Door still closed. So I go down the hall, pound on the door three times, and then return to the party. Still no suit. And then it was about 25 minutes in, finally enters the room. I hop out of my chair, give him a standing ovation. Everyone else claps as he, as he enters the room. It's a backhanded standing ovation.
Well, you know my thought on giving the suit a standing ovation, there's a prerequisite to it. You know what that is?
By the way, there was also at one point I yelled, I go, "Hey, Fezziwig, join the party!" I got some reaction. It's like, yeah, he kind of looks like Fezziwig a little bit, doesn't he? It's like, well, with the glasses on, he does, yeah.
The biffer. Again, there's a prerequisite to me giving the suit a standing ovation. You know what that is?
Okay.
No chairs. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Penn State Nittany Lions play on WKOK.
Long and deep down the middle. Hamler, KJ's there, got it. Touchdown, Penn State.
Penn State football is sponsored by Blaze Alexander Ford, Carpet Man, Mifflinburg Auto Sales, Glick Associates, Mifflinburg Hotel, Scarlet D, and Lewisburg Hotel. The Nittany Lions go to the Horseshoe to take on Ohio State Saturday. Kickoff is set for noon. We're on beginning at 10:30 on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Dave Cicchini waiting at the end of the game, or is it just
sure.
Is it just you guys?
I sure hope not, Steve. I mean, that's a deep concern if that happens. I mean, come on here.
Well, he leaves you guys waiting like you're just like furniture.
Imagine if it was like a dark and stormy day, we're at the bus stop, no umbrella, waiting for him to show up.
Well, that's the equivalent of like having something happen to you out in the open, basically looking over at him. And his first words are, like to help, but I think you're not going to make it. All right. So that's our guy.
Getting it done.
I guess he was a kinder, gentler guy until he left Three Pin standing. Now he's been bitter.
He has been referred to as Captain Bitter on the show in the past, yes.
Well, let's pretend that that's not based on reality.
I've also been known to call him Mr. Fun.
Mr. Fun?
Yeah.
Mr. Fun?
Yeah.
And that's based on what?
Well, it's a backhanded reference. Like the standing ovation we gave him at Friendsgiving lunch today, so...
I told you. Even if there's no chair, I might consider the floor.
He would be considered the Ron Mueller of our bunch when it comes to you and Hammer and the guys there, and you got the Mole Man over the...
Okay, now let me give you a Mole Man story from Saturday.
Okay.
You're going to love this.
Fresh one. Okay, we haven't heard this one. Okay.
So Jack looks over at Ron and says, to start the third quarter, and he says, hey, Ron, he says... So while Steve and I are doing this, he says, check the sidelines, see if you can find Hamler. Okay. So we get to the commercial break. And Jack looks over at Ron. He says, I don't know. And so Jack and I at the same time look over and put up our index finger. And I said, you know, Hamler's number one, right? Okay. And so, of course, Ron says, and again, this is all good natured, so please, nobody do it, right? Right? He looks at him. He goes, you two jerks. Right? He says, you're lucky I'm thick-skinned. I said, why? Well, if you were thin-skinned, I said, it really wouldn't matter. We'd just replace you.
There's a line down the hall and down the elevator.
Ron looks over and he says, you're a jerk. he always refers to Jack and he's, you two jokers. I said, you have to admit we have a point. He goes, oh no, you actually do. I said, we wouldn't think about doing that in a million years someplace. but you have to roll with the jokes. So we did.
That's what it's all about, you know. Gotta keep it light, gotta keep it fun.
I said, just a quick reminder on the flip card, I said, start at the top. I said, that'll tell you where Hamler is. Oh, I'll tell you right now, Ron Mueller is a lot like you. If you needed somebody on the face of the earth that would give you the shirt off his back, Sean Kerry would do that, and Ron Mueller would do that.
That's kind of you to say.
Ron Mueller would give you the absolute shirt off his back.
Mole Man.
If it meant it would help you. To say we think the absolute world of the Mole Man, that's why we kid around, because we think the world of him. Now, when it comes to the suit, it's actually serious. All right, so we'll come back more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Penn State and Ohio State Saturday in Columbus. Time now to break down the numbers with a guy that's watched a lot of tape, seen some in person, and graded it out himself. Cam Miller from Pro Football Focus. Cam, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Well, that's my pleasure as well. Thank you, as always, for being such a gracious host. And I'm not going to lie, I love the time slug.
There you go.
Joe Burrow grades out off the charts for what he's done this year.
How close behind is Justin Fields?
It's pretty close in terms of every aspect. I know he's got the general box score, 31-1 touchdown interception ratio. That's mirrored in our advanced stats in terms of big time throws and turnover worthy plays. He just doesn't grade negatively. He doesn't grade basically anything but positive. So for what Fields is doing, if it weren't for Burrow, everybody in the country would be talking about Fields.
All right, so let's take him through. You know, where does he excel, especially throwing the football in terms of zones of the field?
So it's anything 10 or more yards down the field. I thought that this was going to be kind of bring him in under the under this Ryan Day offense and allow him to kind of get his feet wet, do more of what we saw from Dwayne Haskins and JT Barrett, where you're throwing 3-4 yard crossers and letting the guys do their work. But no, it's the exact opposite. He's actually the only quarterback in the country to throw 17 or more touchdowns and have fewer than 2 interceptions on throws targeted 10 or more yards down the field. So he's not just a dual threat rushing quarterback that's going to take off and run. He actually looks for downfield throws, and if he breaks contain, breaks the pocket, plays outside of structure, he's still looking downfield. And it's between the numbers. It's honestly everywhere. Between the numbers, out with the numbers, 10, 15, 19, 20. It doesn't matter at all where he throws. It's downfield, and he dissects defenses.
If I said this once, I said it 100 times in the offseason to various groups when you're speaking to them. They'll ask about various teams. And when they asked about Ohio State, I said J.K. Dobbins not having Dwayne Haskins there and having Justin Fields there is going to thrive because of the style of play that Fields brings to the table. Grading out-wise, has Dobbins thrived?
Absolutely. He's setting his career record. So after 2 years of great production, year three of him featured in the offense has been his best yet. Grade-wise, overall grade, rushing grade, not putting the ball in the turf very often. I think he has, in my opinion, 2 of the 3 best stiff arms from any running back this year as well, in terms of just brutal plays in which he just plays like he's a foot taller than anybody trying to tackle him. So anytime you're averaging anything 7 yards or more per carry, that's a pretty staggering figure.
A player that Penn State really didn't see a lot of last year, but then down the stretch everybody saw a lot of last year, was Chris Olave at wide receiver. This year, he's been the full-time guy there. What kind of difference has he made in the offense?
I honestly didn't see it coming. I had him even pegged as a breakout kind of guy in an offseason article of mine just based on what we did see. His ability to high point the football and go grab those contested catches. Fields doesn't throw a lot of contested balls, but when he does, he knows Olave's going to get him. And I mean, we just saw, even when there's a bit of an underthrow or a play where he has to break off the receiver late, he makes that highlight reel catch just last week, what, between his legs or using
yes.
his foot.
Yeah.
I mean, that just shows his ball skills. He's made quite a difference in terms of, they haven't had somebody that's been able to go get it down the field like he has in a while. I mean, K.J. Hill and Paris Campbell last year, right, and even Hill this year, are kind of those crossers across the middle, those short, get them in space and let them do their thing. So he has a different dynamic, and I think Fields has really been able to exploit that against defenses.
Yeah, great hands, great ankles based on that catch against Rutgers. I mean, let's give him, do you grade out the ankles? I mean, how well is the offensive line graded out for Ohio State?
They've been good, not great. It's definitely, if you're going to pick one area of weakness on their offense, it's the offensive line. But I mean, they're still keeping pressure away from Fields at an absurd rate as well. I mean, over 80% of his dropbacks have been kept clean mm-hmm. from the offensive line alone. He's kind of got himself into a little bit of pressure in sometimes on his own field tests. But they're all good, not great. Everybody's got these kind of well above average, but no one's in that elite threshold that we've seen from them previously before. Billy Price was one of those guys where everybody around him was good, but he was elite.
Yes.
So Wyatt Davis is their best at right guard. He's an absolute mauler, and if you see a big hole get gashed through, it's because Davis is pushing the way.
I had to laugh because, watching the tape, you see how good Wyatt Davis is. Mumford's pretty good, too, by the way.
Big fan.
But sometimes in the press box, not everybody with its duplicate numbers. So I get the Rutgers Ohio State play-by-play sheet. And I just want to check to see who started for Ohio State just to make sure my chart's correct, based on the last game. Antoine Jackson. I'm like, Antoine Jackson? I don't have Antoine Jackson on my chart anywhere. And so I go to the roster. He's 52. It was Wyatt Davis. They had the wrong 52 starting.
Look, it was a warm-up game for everybody against Rutgers.
Oh, goodness. Oh, all right. Okay. Now we get, you mentioned, you used the word elite at one point.
And I think we've just described, obviously, Chase Young. It doesn't take a genius to say that this guy is just off the charts. Numerically, how off the charts is he?
We've never had anybody grade as high as he has this late of the season. So it's relatively off the charts for us. We've only been doing college football since 2014. We have some historical data here and there, and he has surpassed it all at this point of the season. Every number that you kind of look at, maybe not total pressures because he hasn't really had to play a full game essentially. And even if he did play in the last two games, I don't think we see him for the second half. So realistically, he missed about a full game's worth, four quarters worth of action with his suspension. But I mean, for as many times as he's been able to rush the passer and still get consistent pressure and beat the tackle in front of him, it's been absurd, and it's pushing the boundaries of even what we've seen from Aaron Donald at the NFL level.
All right. How's the linebacking group been? I know Malik Harrison's probably graded out really well, but what about the other two?
Yeah, it's been interesting. Tough Borland has his moments and his time to shine, I think, but they've been kind of, again, if there's a one weakness on that entire defense, I would say it's a linebacking core, but I think that's a matter of picking and choosing. They're all very, very good. They're all very sharp. Harrison is the highest graded, though, in terms of the majority of the snaps that are being played and for how well he's played when he's on the field. But yeah, Tough has had a tough time. I'll use a play on words there in terms of coverage, I think, is his worst suit, so to speak. So if there's one matchup to exploit, it's hopefully a healthy Hamler, if that's the case, or Freiermuth over the middle in terms of tasking Tough Borland with coverage.
Yeah, because last year they took Harrison and they spied him on Trace McSorley. I mean, that's how they tried to handle McSorley last year with Harrison spying him the entire game. All right, now let's get to some of the Penn State stuff in this one. I'm going to assume Micah Parsons graded out pretty well for you guys last week.
He did. He was up there, I believe, and after a couple of reviews, changed some things around on us naturally. He made and was on our Big Ten Team of the Week at one point and maintained that through our reviews. So that's how good it was. After a further review, he was the defensive player with an elite grade. I mean, when you're racking up that many tackles and you're not missing tackles and then you're playing super well in coverage too, I mean, that's a recipe for great grades, and that's what he got.
All right. Journey Brown is a running back. He now has three 100-yard rushing games this season and back-to-back. Is he grading out well from what you're seeing?
Yes. I thought honestly, from what we saw originally from Kane, is that he was going to be the higher-graded running back, but with him sustaining the injury and I've been pleasantly surprised, I guess, is the best way, from what the grades had shown early on Brown. But, I mean, when you have holes like that, and then you can hit him with the burst that he's shown just against Indiana especially, to, you know, get down the field 5, 6, 7, 8 yards before anybody's even close to contacting you, that speaks to not only run blocking, in my opinion, it also speaks to the vision. You have to be able to see the holes. Run blocking can pave the way for those holes, but Brown's vision has been very, very sharp so far. And he was right behind Clifford in terms of rushing grade, but even surpassed Clifford with overall grade against Indiana.
And on the offensive line, the fifth-year senior is Steven Gonzalez. Has he been pretty consistent on grade for you all year?
I've seen consistency from him, and I mean, honestly, I remember when I first started at PFF, he was there, and he had high grades even then. So
yes.
One of my first images I ever made, actually, because I used to do all of our graphic design, was a Steven Gonzalez graphic. And, I mean, he's not the highest graded of the starters so far, but he is the one up there in terms of he is the second highest in run blocking, and then second highest in pass blocking grade, I believe. So it's consistent grades right above our mark of above average. So he's even above average in our very good category in all facets of play.
Who's been one in the offensive line?
Michael Manette.
Michael Manette. Yeah, that's what I was going to volunteer that, but I figured I'd let you read it. Sorry.
It's run blocking pushing him up there.
Yeah, no. Manette is really, really good. There's no getting around it. Okay, a couple teams that are just outside. I want to go a team that's on the outside looking in. What kind of grade do you have on Mac Jones now that it's going to fall upon his shoulders? Because he hasn't been put really in any spot yet to really do anything. So does that affect what the grade is?
See, it's an interesting There was no downgrade in the Alabama offense when he played against Arkansas compared to any game with Tua at quarterback. So while it's a small sample size, he threw 22 passes. One of them was an intentional throw out of bounds. So he completed 18 of 21 attempted passes, essentially, in my book. Three touchdowns, 250-plus yards. It's not a there's no grade that jumped out for him. It was not negative. He didn't grade negatively at all in the game. And so in my opinion, this is a guy who is sitting there with a with an above average grade right now on a small sample size in the best situation in college football, in my opinion.
Well, they're playing Western Carolina this week. I can guarantee he's not getting a negative grade this week. and if he graded out like that against Arkansas, what's Joe Burrow going to do Saturday night against Arkansas? That's it. We'll leave that for next week, Cam, at some point.
Oh, man. We give them a 99.7% win chance in that game, LSU. So that is the highest of the weekend and the highest we've seen against any SEC versus SEC team.
So you're giving Arkansas a 0.3% chance of winning?
I thought even that was high.
So you say they have a chance.
You're telling me there's a chance.
You're telling me there's a slim hope. You're telling me there's a chance. I want to ask you about one unit, all right? And it's out west. It's the Utah defensive unit. Obviously, getting Moss back has changed the dynamics of that team. I mean, you could tell that without him, they were a little bit lost. But a constant usually has been the Utah defense. How good?
They're probably, if Ohio State isn't the best in the country, OSU is there. Utah may be number two in the country, in my opinion, overall, in terms of the depth. There's no other conference right now that has the amount of one singular team in terms of highly graded players. So the Pac-12 right now, the four highest graded individual players on defense are four Utah Utes. No other conference has two in the top five. And so that's how good they are in their depth overall. My favorite player on the team, it's not Bradley and I rushing the passer on the edge. It's actually Julian Blackman, who switched over from full-time corner to safety for them this year.
Right.
And it took a little bit of time for him to get used to it, but all of a sudden he's the one who forced that crazy. He blitzed perfectly, read it, forced Dorian Thompson-Robinson out of the pocket, stripped sack, and, I mean, just changed the game for them against UCLA. He seemed to come into his own in his new position, and it's showing he's the highest-graded player in the Pac-12.
Who is in charge of grading Big 12 defenses on your staff, and how creative do they have to be, Cam?
we have several guys. Our lead Big 12 guy. We leave him in Canada, actually. So he's got a lot to put up with. There's definitely fewer positive grades in Big 12 defenses than there are negative. That's for sure.
I mean, there are teams on kneel downs that gain yards in the Big 12. All right, so Cam, what a great pleasure. Do we have Cam next week? I mean, it's Thanksgiving. That's why I'm asking.
Hey, I'll be here if you need me here.
Just in case, I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. We've been very grateful for having you on the show. The audience loves it. We really appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. And same if we're not here Thursday doing the same thing. I'll be doing it from my house if that's the case. But otherwise, happy Thanksgiving to you guys as well. And I've enjoyed it just as much.
That is Cam Miller. We'll try and get Cam maybe either Wednesday or Friday next week when we're on. That's what we'll attempt to do. All right.
That's right, because we will have a show live next Friday. We'll be
yes,
here.
Yes, we will.
Yep, we'll be here.
Yeah, no, we'll have a show live Friday.
Sure.
I'll be in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. There's nothing. I told you the story yesterday about Macy's, right? Bob Taylor says, well, what about the Macy's parade? I go, what about it?
There's the balloons. There's the cartoon characters.
I said, that's why God created TV. Enjoy.
And Uber.
I said, bus, Uber. I said, I'm not crossing the Brooklyn Bridge, babe, and dropping you off. I'm not doing it. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Dave Rushton, Big Ten Network, in the next half hour, King final half hour, we'll do our picks. The King, for the first time all season, is reeling. How about that? Big word.
Well, three of us, though, we bounced back from last week, including the King, 4-3. You were 5-2. I was 6-1, so we are surging officially.
Yes.
Gaining ground here over the past three-plus weeks. So now I am two off the pace, and you're up by one over KJ.
That's how tough and close it is at this point.
It's getting good.
Meanwhile, our bowl picks are waiting in the wings with the defending champion.
The three-time already defending champion.
Doing research in his office as we speak, which is not what Roger wanted to hear.
I think that would land, the bowl picks segment would probably be, I'm just kind of guessing off the top of my head, that'd be what, Friday, December 20th would probably be that, I think. That'd be the opening weekend of the bowl games, I believe.
Is it that weekend?
I would think. Probably like Thursday the 19th or Friday the 20th, then we would have our defending champion on to reel off some bowl picks. So
let me see.
But we will
check this out. Bowl Central. What the bowl games are. When the first one is. Because we're going to have to find out. I don't know why I thought with the semifinals on the 28th.
Maybe the other lower tier bowl games would start a little sooner. That's true.
Let's see. Championship game. Naturally, of course, these guys go backwards. You're right. It is the 20th.
Okay.
The Makers Wanted Bahamas Bowl.
Oh, sure. Right out with a warm place right out of the chute. Sure.
Well, it's funny because Matt Shepard, who now does the Detroit Lions and had been the radio voice for Michigan basketball, as soon as he got the Tigers job, then he had to drop that. Also did Eastern Michigan football. So Eastern Michigan, which had languished for years, finally had a really good season a couple of years ago. And they've been pretty good since, but had a good season a couple of years ago, and they finished above 500, and guess what? They got an invitation to the Bahamas Bowl. So I see Matt early in January. In other words, it would have been, 2 weeks after the bowl game? And I said, hey, Matt, how was the Bahamas? He says, Steve, he says, they flew us in the night before. He said, the game was at noon. They flew us out the night as soon as the game was over. He says, I wasn't even there 24 hours. I said, great. Fabulous bowl experience. The Bahamas Bowl. Then you got the Frisco Bowl. Celebration Bowl, which the suit loves and always picks right. He picks that one right every year.
I think that was that was our leadoff game last year.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He broke that game down. It took, we got 40 games to do here. He was, he wanted to go 5 minutes with that game alone. It's like, come on.
So we have an hour to do everything, and we got to the second bowl pick with 15 minutes to go. Then you got the New Mexico Bowl, the Boca Raton Bowl, the Camellia Bowl, the Las Vegas Bowl, which eventually is going to be a Big Ten Bowl. Not this year. You got the New Orleans Bowl, the Gasparilla Bowl, the SoFi Hawaii Bowl, the Independence Bowl, Quick Lane, Military, Pinstripe Academy, Sports and Outdoor Texas Bowl, Holiday Bowl, Cheez-It Bowl, Camping World, Cotton Bowl, Fiesta Bowl, Peach Bowl, First Responder Bowl, Music City, Red Box, Orange Bowl, Belk Bowl, Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, Liberty Bowl, Alamo Bowl, Citrus Bowl, Outback Bowl, Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Birmingham Bowl, Gator Bowl, Potato Bowl, Armed Forces Bowl, and the Mobile Alabama Bowl, which means they have no sponsor. All right, next half hour, Dave Refson. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.